there, everybody. You are listening to This Show Is So Gay. I'm your host, Ken Schneck. This is episode number 293. As always, you can get in touch with us by dropping us a line, send an email on over to ken@thisshowissogay.com. Stroll on over to thisshowissogay.com to learn all about the fun things happening with our little gay radio show that could. You can follow us on Twitter. The handle is This Show Is So Gay. And of course, go to the Facebook, type in This Show Is So Gay, like us, because we sure as heck like you. So much to get to on this week's episode. We must get started. So a few years ago, I had this idea that we were going to be doing this whole series called These 50 States Are So Gay. And we got through maybe like three states, and then some sort of gay ADD kicked in and I moved on to other things. But we're returning to that, and we're going to move through some more states. And for this week's episode, we are focused on the Pine Tree State, the great state of Maine, with two amazing guests. We are going to start with the first one. Elise Johansson is the Executive Director of Equality Maine, an organization that works to secure full equality for lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender people in Maine through political action, community organizing, education, and collaboration. Elise was formerly the director of teen outreach for Planned Parenthood down in South Florida, and she spent 10-plus years as the director of youth services for Gulfstream Goodwill Industries, doing incredible work to help at-risk youth. She's published a ton of short stories and essays. Now she's here with us. Elise, welcome to The Show Is So Gay.
Oh, thank you. I'm so happy to be here.
So much to talk about with the Pine Tree State. I had to look that up.
It's amazing here.
We have to talk about you first because you have such a cool background. We've had so many different executive directors on our show over the past 7+ years, and you have a bit of a different background. Do you have a sense that you have a bit of a different background than most?
No, that's interesting. I mean, I don't know. I haven't really ever thought about it, actually.
Elise Johansson, not a lawyer.
No, I know. I know. Elise Johansson, not a lawyer. Elise Johansson, not an accountant. Yeah.
You have this great background in creative writing.
Oh, thank you. My master's in fine arts in creative writing and fiction.
Which we have to give a shout out to Fairleigh Dickinson, my father's alma mater. Anytime I could give a shout out, he gets very excited.
Oh my gosh, that was my father's alma mater.
Oh, look at that!
I applied to grad school there. That's funny.
I love it. I love it. I even did some research into empathy and relation connecting to the damaged character.
Oh, very cool.
For folks who somehow have not read that today, your master's thesis.
Oh, and you found it? You were able to find it?
No, I just found the title, though. I was really impressed about that.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, so that was just a collection of short stories. Where people, the authors, wrote a lot about the human body and how that relates to the way people express their emotions or necessarily don't, or maybe don't express their emotions. So,
nice.
Yeah.
Well, that has to come in handy in nonprofit work.
Yeah, it does, actually.
Well, talk to me about your background. As I mentioned in the bio, you've done a lot of work with at-risk youth. You've done work with Planned Parenthood. What brings you, Elise Johansson, to the nonprofit sector?
Oh, wow. So when I was, I guess this was in 2002, I ran into someone just in my neighborhood, and they got a job at Goodwill, and she had said to me, oh, my goodness, you should totally get a job there. And I didn't mean to sound snobby, but I think I did. And I was like, well, I don't want to work in a thrift store because I had no interest in retail. I hadn't been working in retail. And so she's like, no. The thrift stores are what fund the program. And so I was like, oh, okay, well, then what does Goodwill do? And when she told me that they were hiring in the evaluation department to work with people, adults with developmental disabilities or mental health, all this different stuff, I applied. And then just worked my way up through the company in all the years that I've been there, and ran the brain injury department for a while.
Wow.
Was a case manager, and then for years before I left, I was running the youth department, where we served youth at risk with developmental disabilities, mental health diagnoses, and most of the people I served at the end were youth who had just been arrested with some pretty intense crimes.
Wow. Wow.
Yeah.
Can we do a little self-analysis? What do you think about you is just uniquely fitted to do this kind of work?
I believe in taking care of your community, being a support to other people that maybe need the support. And I don't know, I always loved working with people that maybe had never seen a different way.
Yeah.
And maybe there was this opportunity to you know, teach, but also to learn myself a little bit, which I think I did the most working with young people. And particularly some of the young people I worked with had been really heavily involved in gangs and had come through some really tumultuous childhoods, and just seeing their resiliency was pretty inspiring.
Awesome.
And I loved it. It was different every single day. And I think that's in any nonprofit, every single day is different.
I bet. Well, let's do a little flash forward. Flashing forward to you start there at Equality Maine in the early part of 2014. So I would imagine sometime in 2013, was there a job ad? Did someone say, Elise, you should totally consider this?
Yeah, so actually my wife and I were living in Florida and our dream was to move out of Florida. And our top state was Maine. That's where we wanted to be. And I had joined a executive leadership search company. I had like signed up to receive all of their job postings. And I had, when we knew we wanted to move to Maine, I did this like really high tech search and Googled gay Maine.
Nice.
And I was really doing some heavy research. So, and up came Equality Maine. And I was like, oh, this would be my dream job, would to be the executive director of Equality Maine. This would be so amazing. But they weren't hiring. And so I just kept randomly checking the website, and I would go and look on the calendar and see what was happening in Maine. And then one day, I got a email from the executive leadership search firm that Equality Maine was hiring for an executive director, and I also had gone on the site that same day, so I don't remember which one happened first, but it was really bizarre, and I said to my wife, I was like, okay, well, I need to apply, this is crazy, and we had already been moving to Maine, like we were already en route to move to Maine.
Wow.
Yeah, and so like our household sold in Florida. We were in the Carolinas for a couple weeks making our voyage up here, and the job got posted.
I love that you wrote in the cover letter, we're coming to you.
Yeah, totally.
We're on our way. Just hold on.
Yeah.
Hold on.
I know. It was really pretty wild and amazing, and yeah, everything happens for a reason. And I was working full time for Planned Parenthood too, on our way up here. So I was able to do that remotely until I started at Equality Maine. So it's pretty seamless.
Well, before we even get to Equality Maine, we will give you the floor. And I love it because you're not a Maine born and bred person. So we give you the floor to extol the virtues of Maine. I love Maine. I love Portland so much.
Yeah. Yeah. Where have you been there?
Okay, so I've only been to Portland, but I've been to Portland so many times, and it doesn't even occur to me when I say I go to Portland, people think it's Oregon. I'm like, no, Portland, Maine, because I do for the past few years, I've been doing the Charity Treks ride that goes from Montreal to Portland, and it's so brilliant.
Oh, how cool. Yeah, that's pretty awesome. Portland's great. There's so many good restaurants there. It's kind of unbelievable.
I do get the sense, though, that there are all these other places in Maine other than Portland.
Oh, yeah, Portland, I mean, people will probably be upset that I'm saying this, but Portland isn't really, I mean, it's definitely Maine, but it's not anything like the rest of the state. I mean, just driving up the coast or driving to Bangor even is absolutely beautiful. I see bald eagles, I see turkeys, I've seen deer, I've seen fox. I haven't seen any moose yet, though.
Okay.
But Maine's beautiful.
Well, let's get to it. We have to talk about Equality Maine. I gave the mission statement right there in the bio, but this seems like a pretty darn amazing organization.
Yeah, it is. I'm pretty amazed with it on a daily basis.
Now, it's kind of uniquely positioned, and you come to Equality Maine after marriage equality has already happened in Maine. That was passed in 2012 by referendum, for the record, by the way. This was not, you know, judicial as many other states. This was actually Maine voters voting, and other than my other state of Vermont, there's not a lot of those states that do it that way.
I know. They had over, you know, Equality Maine had over 250,000 one-on-one conversations with folks during that.
Wow.
To change hearts and minds, to make sure that people would vote the right way.
But then you come to the organization after that's already happened, which I would think is both a benefit but also a challenge for you as an executive director.
Yeah.
Talk to me about that.
Yeah, I mean, there is a part of me that's sad that I didn't get to go through that with the community, because I know that it was life-changing for folks. I know it was bonding for our community. I know that it was, you know, after the horrible loss in 2009 and then everybody pulling together and winning in 2012, I know that there was a lot of beautiful moments that I wasn't able to be a part of. And so that part is terrible. But the good part is that I get to be part of this incredible organization now in our new iteration of what this work looks like. I get to be married to my wonderful wife in the state. I get to work alongside the people who fought their butts off. I hope I can say that on the radio, but people who fought their butts off and did this work here. And so I don't know if I could have done I don't know if I could have run a marriage campaign like that. I don't know. I mean, I am a programs person. I'm a strategic thinker and a creative leader. And so, you know, programs are what I've done. I don't know if I could have done what the past executive director did. So, I believe I'm here as the ED now because it's the right thing for Equality Maine. It's the right thing for me. And so I don't know. It's been really fantastic, but like you said, and like I mentioned, it's kind of a bummer that I didn't get to be part of that.
Yeah. I lived in Vermont for 6 years prior to moving here to Ohio last year, and I know one of the challenges in doing LGBT, doing equality work in Vermont was that in this kind of post-marriage state where that has already been achieved, there was a bit of a drop-off, a bit of complacency on the part of even in the LGBT community to keep momentum going. I would assume there's still so much work to be done there in Maine.
Yeah, absolutely. And one of the things I say to folks is some people who are some of our biggest allies don't still see the work that needs to be done. A lot of people with noble intent, they mean well, are like, well, you have marriage. What else do you need? You know, you have a non-discrimination law. What else do you need? You have an anti-bullying law. What else do you need? And so, but laws don't necessarily change human behavior.
Yeah.
And I think that, you know, I, as a gay woman, see the work that needs to be done on a daily basis. Just within my own community, I live in a pretty progressive part of Maine, and I know that. But, you know, my wife and I still get stares sometimes. And, you know, luckily we've found doctors who have been kind to us. And, you know, all the places we've gone to have our needs met have been great. But it is a... it is still a challenge, and there is still more work that needs to be done. Or in particular in Maine right now, you know, transgender Mainers are being denied comprehensive healthcare coverage in the state. And I know many other states are still encountering that same problem, even with marriage. It doesn't fix everything.
So much work. Well, I read in preparing to speak with you, I read the document that I assume you just read every night before you go to bed. Of course, that is the Equality Maine Strategic Plan 2013 to 2018. You love it.
I'm looking at my bedside table.
I would assume at this point your wife can at least state two of the goals. I think she knows it pretty well. She knows it.
She does.
I wanted to go through some of them just because there's so many issues that we don't, and we've been doing this show for so long, and yet there's so many issues that we don't get enough of a chance to talk about, and it's issues on which you guys are focused there, so I wanted to shout out some of them. One of your goals is to ensure that LGBT elders are safe, healthy, connected in the community, and free from discrimination. Talk to me about some of that work.
Yeah, so also part of our strategic plan is capacity building for other organizations because, you know, yes, we're statewide, but there's a lot of other organizations that do some incredible work on the ground. And so part of our work is supporting them by maybe helping grant write or just provide some support in whatever area they need. And one thing that we've been doing around our elder work is co-hosting community conversations.
Nice.
We've done one recently. And we are going to do a couple more in the coming months with some incredible elders from around our state just to kind of open up conversations to hear what people's needs are so we know how to fill those. You know, I don't want to come in as, you know, the age I am and think that I know what elders need.
Another one of your goals, which I love, and I know that it's a specific part of Equality Maine that does this, and I know that's for fiscal reasons as well, but gosh, I love the goal of building and maintaining political power for Maine's LGBT community. So important.
Yes, it is.
How do we do that?
So we have a LGBT coalition in Maine, and we have some amazing coalition partners, and around each session. So currently, and we have for a very long time, we do endorsements for, you know, the state house for representatives and senators, and that has been really fantastic. We have, I think, 186 people in the state house, and for every single one of those races, there were at least two people running. So our endorsement process is pretty huge. And then we also, so we endorse pro-equality candidates. We give them questionnaires. They have a ton of questions that they need to answer. I love to look back on those questions when I need to ask them something in the future. Be like, remember when you said, you know, you support same-sex marriage. Remember that? Well, now I need you for this.
Yes.
And that's really great. But then also, so for this coming legislative session that we're in already, we're working with our LGBT Legislative Priority Committee, which is comprised of some fantastic people from GLAAD and ACLU, Maine Family Planning, the Maine Women's Lobby, and others. And we get together and we look at all 1,500 bills and say which ones of these are going to affect our community, either positively or negatively. And we work really hard to support or defeat those bills. We have a lobbyist. There's me who's up in the state house. We mobilize our community. We do phone banking. We have people write letters to the editor. Our voices need to be heard. We're an important part of our community and our state. And we need to make sure that our wants and needs are taken care of, too.
Yeah. Oh, it's so great. It's so great. You know, we had Elizabeth Holford, the executive director of Equality Ohio, on the show a few weeks ago. And I'll ask you the question that I asked her. What do you think is different about doing the work that you do in your state? Obviously, I'm sure there's tons of transferable skills to being an executive director of a statewide LGBT organization from state to state. But what's different about doing this work in Maine, do you think?
Oh, everybody knows everybody in Maine.
Nice.
And that's not an exaggeration. It is the biggest small town, I think they say, unless I'm saying it incorrectly. But I mean, you can go anywhere and it's just really, it's pretty wild. It can work in your favor, and sometimes it can work against you. But there's some great people here. They are very politically involved. They care about their community, and they have opinions, and they're not afraid to talk about them.
Nice. We have to get to the part where what is it that people listening can do? Because, you know, look, we love talking about these issues, and clearly there's a lot of work to do there in Maine, but we want to empower our listening audience, particularly if they live in Maine, to get involved. What should people listening actually do to get involved?
Wow, that's a great question. We still have, a lot of opportunities for people to volunteer. You know, right now we're getting ready for our annual gala, so there's opportunities like that. You know, we're looking for people who are able to fund some of our work. Post-marriage, and like I said earlier, is some people think, oh, you have marriage, what's there left to do, and experience some donor fatigue from years and years and years of fighting for marriage. And so to getting some people re-engaged and recommitted in a funding capacity for our organization is important for our longevity. Also, we need people to stand up and to speak out as allies, and to help us advocate at the state house.
My favorite question to ask an executive director, it is the question that we always close with. I give you the floor, Elise Johansson, the executive director of Equality Maine, to extol the virtues of your staff and volunteers and board.
Oh my gosh, how fantastic they are.
Yeah.
You want me to talk about that? Oh my gosh. Okay, so this is easy for me. I have the best team ever. And I know other EDs might argue with me and they might think they have the best team ever, but my program coordinator, Gia Drew, is incredible. My development director, Chris O'Connor, is just fantastic. Office manager, John McKenna, he keeps us all sane on a daily basis with his incredible sense of humor and his attention to detail. And my board, have been through so much with me, and I am so grateful for them and their expertise and the community. I depend on them for Equality Maine works for all of us. Equality Maine works for me. We are a statewide organization for the LGBTQ community, and I'm part of that. And so I'm lucky for my community. So I'm very grateful.
Oh, so great. So great. Well, listen, listeners, everyone needs to stroll on over to equalitymaine.org. They are doing some great work there. They're not going to turn down your funding, by the way. If you want to click on that contribute button, we're fine with you helping out, right?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. No, I think it's great. I'll send you a sticker. And something. I don't know. I'll knit you something.
That was such a New England thing to say. It's almost like you're from there. I did my 6 years in Vermont. That was a very New England thing you just said.
Yeah, totally.
That
yeah.
was awesome. That was awesome. Actually, I do want to ask you one more question, and I know I usually end with the staff and board, but I'm looking at your board of directors, and in knowing the work that I've done in New England, I know that one of the challenges in doing some of this work in New England is bringing in volunteers and reaching out to communities of color. And we would be remiss if we didn't take a second right now just to talk about that particular challenge. And maybe it's not a challenge in Maine, and you've got it down pat, but talk to us about that.
Yeah, no, it is a challenge. Maine doesn't have a huge population of people of color. And I think rurally, you know, just across the state, of course, there is, a larger population of folks in Lewiston, Auburn, and maybe in Portland. But we have not recruited anybody to be on our board. And that's something that our current board and myself included are really committed to. I think that it's important to have a board that represents the community as best that we possibly can. And so that's something that has been discussed. It is apparent that it's missing, and it's something that we're working on. We've worked really hard to get some transgender folks on our board. We have our straight allies on the board. We have a Republican on our board. I mean, we need to be as welcoming and diverse as possible. And I think the word diverse is sometimes misused.
Right.
People don't always think, like, oh, I'm diverse. I have, this and this. And, but I really believe that we need to be more reflective of our actual community.
Again, listeners, equalitymaine.org. There are so many ways that you can get involved, including just learning more about what's going on in the Pine Tree State, which I learned earlier today is the great state of Maine. Elise Johansson, just on behalf of all of us who are seeing the great work that you guys are doing there at Equality Maine, our best to your staff and your board and volunteers, and please, you yourself, please keep doing what you're doing.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Thanks for having me.
Snow can wait. I forgot.
All right, folks, and we are back with our second guest focusing on the state of Maine for this week's episode. Representative Justin Chenette is serving his second term in the Maine House of Representatives. In 2012, Justin made history by becoming the nation's youngest openly gay legislator and Maine's youngest lawmaker at age 21. He has served on the state and local government committee as youth caucus vice chair and continues to serve as the Young Elected Official Network State Director. In 2013, Justin founded a 501c3 nonprofit to empower active citizenship and social responsibility through volunteerism. We love that. In 2008, the governor of Maine appointed Justin to the Maine State Board of Education as the first ever student member. He's hosted his own public affairs TV show. He's been a national delegate to the Democratic National Convention. He's interned for Olympia Snow. Somewhere in all of that, he finished a college degree. Now he's here with us. Justin Chenette, welcome to this show with So Gay.
Thank you so much for having me, Ken. Gosh, that was a mouthful.
Justin, there's a degree to which your bio is inspiring, but on the other hand, it kind of makes the rest of us feel like couch potatoes. How can you reconcile that for us?
Oh, no, it's supposed to mean that you can empower yourself. You feel excited. You feel like, oh, my gosh, I need to follow my own passions in life. So hopefully it's meant as an encouragement.
We'll go with that. We'll go with that. Well, let's start with the Pine Tree State. If you were on the Maine Tourism Board, which I kind of feel like you are anyway, extol for our listeners the virtues of the wonderful state of Maine.
I would have to say that why I love living here is the people. The people really make our state a wonderful place to live. But why somebody should visit here are the abundant natural resources that we have. One of my top favorite places in the entire world is Bar Harbor, which is Acadia National Park. It is just a spiritual adventure, let's just say it that way. It is one of the most beautiful places you will ever see. Getting to climb Cadillac Mountain, getting to hike on different trails. It's just such a breathtaking experience, so I definitely recommend it for people. But there's something for everybody in Maine, which is that's what I really love about it. Whether you're touring the state to lighthouse or along the coast, or you are a big outdoorsman and you want to kind of travel the Allegash River, I mean, there's so much to do here, which I think is something that if anybody was thinking about, hey, I want to take a vacation this coming summer, Maine should be your destination.
I love it. This was brought to you by the Maine Tourism Board. That was so good, Justin. That was good. Now, let's talk about you. We have so much ground to cover, but let's start with you. I can't go all the way back because I feel like you've been active your entire life, but I have to say I particularly enjoy watching a video of Justin in the fifth grade pushing for a school policy change on school uniforms.
Oh, yes. I came across an old VHS tape, and I was like, I need to convert this quickly before it's done. So it was interesting because when I was in elementary school, I was a weird child, and I loved getting politically involved. And we were debating whether or not to install basically this new policy of school uniforms. Not, you know, the strict, you know, policy of, you know, you have to wear a certain thing, but more open where you had to wear khakis and a polo. And I just felt so strongly about it. And it was like the first time where I really saw a problem and I wanted to seek a solution to it, and I wanted to implement that solution. So I advocated for this policy change to make sure that we weren't focusing on this fashion show. We were focused on learning and in the classroom experience. So I went on the news and we talked about the policy change. It was implemented, and the year after we took a little analysis, and guess what? It was effective. And so it was the first sort of foray into the political world.
I mean, I understand that you were successful, but do you not watch the video and think, oh my gosh, how cute was I?
Well, I will have to say, if you watch the video on the Facebook page, you'll see that I have a rolling backpack, so I couldn't have been that cool. I mean, that was like the fad for a little bit, was you had to have the rolling backpack, which was basically a glorified suitcase. So I was definitely proud of my rolling backpack, but looking back on it, I was like, gosh, that was such a dork.
What do we have to do to get you to use that backpack in the Maine State House?
Well, I don't have it now, but I don't think it would actually work. We have a lot of stairs,
okay.
To say it that way.
You could hear Justin come, and he's banging the backpack up the stairs again. Yeah, that's problematic.
Yeah.
It's problematic.
Yeah.
So many different highlights, and I'm going to jump around a little. I love that you got to serve as a delegate to the Maine Democratic State Convention. How exciting are things like that?
No, it was really exciting. I was obviously mounting my first campaign for public office. And it was in the middle of a contested primary, so attending our state Democratic convention was really important. And that was quite an experience, but getting selected to go to the national convention
Huge.
Down in North Carolina, that was the thrill. I mean, not to take away the main state convention, but there's a big difference
oh, yeah.
between that and the national convention. And so I was selected as one of the delegates, and I was one of the youngest delegates from our delegation, and it was almost like an aha, like, this is what I need to be doing. I really love it. You know, well, some people like sports and they follow all the sports stats and everything. I'm a kind of a political junkie and I really sort of get excited, you know, when Hillary Clinton takes the stage or Bill Clinton takes the stage or some of the power hitters in our party. And so I definitely really enjoyed that as a highlight while I was busy campaigning, obviously.
While you were there, you participated in the Youth Caucus with delegates under 30 from across the country. I would imagine that was insanely inspiring.
Well, actually, it laid the groundwork for starting a Youth Caucus, actually, in the legislature. When I was elected, that was the first thing I did, was work with my Republican colleagues to form an under 30 caucus. And we've actually been able to achieve a lot of great policy successes because of that work, that strong bipartisan effort. So while at the Democratic Convention, they might not be talking about being bipartisan, you know, seeing what other young people do across the state was so inspiring. And I took that back home with me and said, there needs to be a way of connecting young policymakers across the aisle to see what can we do to set the example for our peers that have maybe been here a while to say, yes, we can come together for the betterment of our state. We can come together to actually solve real problems and not just bicker back and forth. And so there was some major tangible benefits of attending conferences like that and conventions like that, because then you can go back to your home state and say, this is the best practice. This is how we can implement change.
Well, I was going to save it for later, but we have our natural transition right here. Let's talk about youth participation. I mean, look, I'm a college professor. I work with youth age 18 to 24 every single day of the week. And there's certainly among some of them is this feeling of disenfranchisement, of just feeling like my voice doesn't matter, I can't make a difference. To them, you, Justin, a state representative, say what?
I have to start with a story. I know that's a typical politician
thing, love it.
I have to start with a story. I was in high school. I was about 17 years old, and I was interviewing actually a politician on my TV show. And we were, when the camera stopped rolling, we were clearly not seeing eye to eye on a particular issue. I think it was healthcare reform. And at the end of the conversation, the heated debate, she asked me a question. She said, "How old are you?" And obviously I said 17. And she said, "Well, your opinion does not matter because you can't vote yet." And that really, I'm like, oh no, she did not, right? But that really stuck by me that from that point onward, because that is the assumption out there in society that somehow because you don't turn that magic number of 18, you should not have a seat at the table. You shouldn't have an opinion yet. But you'll never learn that. You'll never learn to mature in your political philosophies. You never learn how government operates if you don't get involved early on. And so, because again, there's no manual for life. Once you turn that magic number of 18, they're not handed a manual. Hey, this is what it means to be a Democrat. Hey, right. This is what it means to be a Republican. You're sort of like, gosh, is this like American Idol or The Voice? Do I turn around in a chair and vote for my president? I don't know. And that really stems from a lack of civic engagement curriculum in high schools across the country, but that's a whole other issue. But the fact of the matter is, I took that as a banner and said, you know what? We have to have a seat at the table. We
right.
have to make a difference. And sometimes it is difficult. It's not an easy path. But if you believe in something wholeheartedly, if you believe that, you can make a difference in the world, just do it. Don't listen to the naysayers. You take that negativity and channel it into something productive, and that's exactly what my career has done up to this point.
Nice, nice. Is there one part of your life that you can point to where you remember thinking, that's it, this is the moment where I have made the decision to run for public office?
Well, I always wanted to be a reporter. And this was one of those things where I think it happens to a lot of people where you really enjoy something, you're good at it, and then all of a sudden you have an aha moment. And literally this happened like one weekend. I was thinking about my future. This happens a lot for young people. You're like, gosh, what am I going to do for the rest of my life? And I really did enjoy reporting, but what I was feeling internally was this feeling of emptiness. And that emptiness was really stemming from this idea that I felt stifled as a journalist, that I couldn't take that next step. If I was interviewing a politician and they said something really idiotic and not factually accurate, sometimes there's a barrier where you can't say, that's wrong, that's not accurate, that's not a correct policy. When you're interviewing other people, when you're telling other people's stories, it's not about getting involved, it's not about making a difference, it's about the story. And so I felt like my voice could not be heard. I could not be an active participant, an active citizen. And that's the challenge for a lot of journalists is because of that professional hat, it's very difficult for them to do that
right.
unless you're like a political columnist.
Right.
And so eventually I realized, gosh, I'm going to have difficulty keeping my mouth shut, even though I really loved being a broadcast journalist. And so I eventually made the decision to run for an open seat in my hometown. Luckily, kind of happened around the same time as the aha moment. So I was like, oh, perfect. And I did it out of frustration, not because I really enjoyed politics, because at the time I really despised politicians and government. I really had that negativity from my journalism background and being taught to hold people accountable.
Yeah.
And so out of frustration for a lack of youth engagement, for a frustration of not having a seat at the table, I decided to throw my hat in the ring.
Nice. Nice. Well, I have to ask you the question, where has being an out gay man helped you? Where has it hurt you? Or has it not really had that much effect?
Loaded question.
I know. That's what we do here, Justin.
Hard-hitting questions. Yeah. I think it's one of those situations where I guess I didn't anticipate one way or the other how that would impact the campaign.
Yeah.
Because it wasn't necessarily a big deal for me, and it never really has been. Obviously, there's a personal challenge there, just like everybody else, that has to go through that. But it never dawned on me that that had to be something I address. And so, interestingly enough, the issue of marriage equality happened to also be on the ballot when I was running for my first time, and luckily we passed marriage equality in Maine that year. And so for a lot of it, it was actually an easy transition. So it's, for instance, I was not talking to somebody at their door, and they mentioned, what is your position on marriage equality? I could say, well, you know, it'd be really great if I could get married at some point.
Yeah.
Right? So it wasn't about some random person waving a flag on Main Street. It was about me. It was about connecting to somebody on a very personal level. And so from that standpoint, it was helpful in personalizing the marriage issue. I don't necessarily know if that helped me on my own campaign, but at least on that issue, I was able to inject some personal stuff into politics. From a negative side, I did have a lot of pushback. And I wasn't really, I mean, I was open, but it wasn't something where it's like, I'm an openly gay candidate. I'm like, I'm a candidate who happens to be gay.
Yeah.
Big difference. And the same goes for now serving in the legislature. Being gay is such a small, I mean, it's not even on the register. To me, it's just something who I am. It's not necessarily something I need to be broadcasting every 5 seconds, because guess what? Straight people don't have to do that.
Right.
You know, so why do I need to do that? But in the campaign, I did have individuals spray paint derogatory, you know, words on my campaign sign. So a lot of vandalism that took place, and this happened over about a month leading up to the campaign. Actually, even on the night in the morning of the campaign, I was out fixing signs and taking them down, having to call police to take down really bad ones. And this was at like midnight on the morning of the election. I was riding around with my sister, and I felt so embarrassed. I'm like, I'm so sorry you have to deal with this, but I need to get these signs up before the election.
Yeah.
And so it was difficult because I had individuals say, Justin, you should fight this. You should bring this to the public's attention. Drive this as a big issue in the campaign. And I got a lot of pressure, especially from the LGBT community and a lot of other individuals saying, I should advocate. I should use this as a platform. And I decided to take a different approach. I decided to say, you know what? Our victory is going to be at the ballot box. Our community is better than this. Our community is going to base their determination on who the best candidate is, who's going to put forward the best policies, based on the real factors in the race, not personality differences or bigotry or whatever, or homophobia. It's going to be based on reality. It's going to be based on what's really important. And guess what? We won with 60%. And so I think that was a silent victory and kind of pushed that issue to the side without having to directly address it. And again, I could have taken a different approach. I could have brought it up to the media. I could have made it a big spectacle. But instead, I decided to win in a different way. And to me, it was a more effective way of dealing with it. And guess what? In my second campaign, didn't have the issue. So I think it's a non-issue. It's becoming a non-issue. Obviously, a lot of the media made a big deal of me being the youngest openly gay legislator. Again, didn't register on my screen. Didn't even think it was going to be a thing after the election. But when the Huffington Post put something out, you know, when other groups put something out, it becomes a much bigger deal. And I'll just have to tell you, Ken, we have not reached true equality in our country until coming out, until being gay is not a headline.
Right.
While I see an inherent benefit in having gay role models, I don't see why it's a story that I became the youngest openly gay legislator. The story is a young person becoming a legislator. That's the story I want people to hear. The being gay part is a secondary piece. It's helpful for those that are questioning. It's helpful for those that are gay to see role models. But to me, I want all young people to think about serving their community, all young people to get civically engaged. It doesn't matter who you are and what your background is. So it's been both a positive and negative to answer your question, but ultimately I've been determined to make this about what's really important, which is what you're bringing to the table, your ideas, your solutions, and bringing people together through service.
Talk to me about day one in the State House. What do you remember about that first day that you served?
Well, I just have to say, the comments on my spiky hair were very plentiful. It was like, are you still in kindergarten? I'm like, no, because I look really young. I mean, I actually look a little different now than I did, you know, 2 years ago. I was kind of, you know, wide-eyed and like, wow, everything's really cool. You know, this is a neat experience. And I had a lot to learn, obviously, but I learned pretty quick. I will say, related to this issue, that there was an interesting question that was posed, and we were talking about LGBT issues, kind of just a lot off to the side. It was myself and a few of my Democratic and Republican House colleagues, and I think I mentioned LGBT, and I kid you not, a Republican said, "Is that a sandwich?"
Oh.
And I thought it was I thought they were joking. I really did think they were joking, but they were not joking. So that's an example where, you know, your personal life can actually be effective, because then you can be like, well, let's educate. Let's show you. Because there's a lot of reps that I meet up here at the State House that never knew a gay person, or that's just their environment living in a rural community. And I don't necessarily fault them for that. And so part of that is just awareness and education, so that when an issue does come up, like the religious freedom debate that we had last session that I had to speak on because I was so upset about it, it's helpful to personalize, much like the marriage debate. When you personalize it and you can connect to someone on a human level, that changes the debate, that changes the dynamics of the conversation, and I think that that's really helpful in turning the tide once and for all on some of these social issues.
Again, listeners, we are here with Maine State Representative Justin Chenette. Justin, let's hit some highs and lows. Give me that day that you walked out of the State House and you just pumped your arms in the air and said, "Victory!" What was one of those shining days for you where you feel like, wow, I really made a difference here?
Well, obviously, when some of my bills get passed, I get pretty excited about it. One of the bills that I pushed forward and it became law was to allow high school educators to grade community service projects as a high school graduation standard. So along with testing, along with different standardized tests, along with performance and a lot of other factors, this enables educators, if they so choose, to use service learning as a more stronger piece into the curriculum. So for those kids that may not learn in the typical classroom environment, they can send kids to, let's say, the soup kitchen and learn communication skills or leadership or team building. And those things can be applicable to any job. So it gets us a little closer to this idea of hands-on experiential learning. That was not only passed, it was passed unanimously in the House and the Senate and signed into law by a rather difficult governor. And so that was an example where, as a freshman, I was able to enact real positive change. That makes it. That makes the difference. You know, when you actually can get those small victories like that, it makes all of the negatives, it outweighs all the negatives. But aside from that, I have found that even when I don't get one of the bills passed that I really want passed, but you nip at the issue. So, for instance, PAC and campaign finance reform. Not a big issue around the dinner table, but one of the most important issues that I've seen being up here, because special interest groups and lobbyists with the largest checkbook really do run the show. They have the greatest access to leadership. They're the ones that create these manufactured crises that we have to end up dealing with instead of the real issues. And so until we solve this, what I would deem as a political cancer in our government, we're never going to tackle the real problems, the long-term systemic problems facing state government. And so as a freshman at 21 years old, I was fighting on something where the system is set up to promote status quo. The system is set up to allow this to happen, this legalized bribery to happen, essentially. And so my first floor speech on the House of Representatives was chastising people of my own party, calling out the speaker of my own party, and obviously on the other side, for playing this game. Obviously, I was not well-liked after that, and I was called into the speaker's office and kind of chastised for, you know, if you want to have a successful career, you better get in line. And to me, it was just, again, one of those examples of another barrier that was put on me, and I said, I'm going to push through this. I was here to represent the people that put me in this position, the people back home in my district, and those are the people I'm fighting for. And so I kept pushing the issue. I'm continuing to talk about this issue. I've put forward legislation again. Hopefully we'll get us closer. I only was able to muster about 56 votes last time. Hopefully there's going to be more of a coalition to support it this time around. But it's an issue where I might not win in terms of tangible policy, but it's raising the awareness of the issue. It's holding people accountable. It's applying the things I learned as a journalist in a tangible public policy way. And I really do think that if that's my only role here, that's what I'm going to fight for.
7 years of doing this show, we've never heard the phrase political cancer on our airwaves. That was very exciting. Now, I know that you are all for bipartisanship, and let's always extol the virtues of bipartisanship, and I don't want you naming any names, but do you have an arch nemesis there in the State House? I feel like you have an arch nemesis.
I would say that I found it interesting that sometimes, I don't know if there's any one particular individual, but I would say I've actually noticed that I almost have more problems with my own party than I do with the other side. And it's not to say that my voting record necessarily reflects that, but there's a lot of internal frustrations with the process, with the system. So if I was to name an arch nemesis, it would be the entire process of state government. It's slow, it's archaic, and it's not effective for people on Main Street. To me, the process is getting in the way of progress. And until we really readdress and reformat how state government is run, we're really not running government effectively and efficiently. And I know that probably sounds like a Republican talking point, but to me, in order to tackle things that I really care about in terms of our democratic values of education and supporting our teachers, things like alternative energy and supporting really good livable wage jobs, you know, we have to make government run more efficiently and effectively, and part of that is campaign finance reform. So to pick one individual, I would say no, but if I was to pick one thing, it would be the entire system of government that is my arch nemesis.
You had to have felt incredibly validated when you mentioned before in your reelection, not only did you get more votes than you did the first time around, but there were a lot of Republicans elected there in the state of Maine in 2014, including the governor, including the Republicans taking control of the state Senate. But State Representative Justin Chenette, one of the few Democratic candidates that did better than they did in their 2012 election. That had to have been validating.
It was very validating. I mean, obviously, when you run for the first time again, you think, okay, this is the election that's going to determine, you know, your public policy positions moving forward. This is the election that validates the past 2 years, the job that you've done up to this point. And so, obviously, it was a very tough year for Democrats. You know, we obviously lost control of the state Senate, and we lost the Blaine House again. It was a really hard thing, and a lot of my good friends lost their election that were really great legislators. But it was just very tough year, and Republicans really had a strong message. But I think one of the things that I was really able to do that I think my district really appreciates is infusing community leadership with what I'm doing in Augusta at the State House, and at the same time recognizing that being bipartisan should not be a dirty word. Compromise shouldn't be a dirty word. And sometimes it's hard because I have constituents on the far left that think I need to push harder on progressive issues, and I have those on the right who think I'm so far to the left I'm coming back around again.
Right.
So, but to me, when I know I'm doing my job effectively, when the left and the right are mad at me, because that means I'm trying to infuse some reality checks, some common sense, because guess what, folks? Democrats are sometimes wrong and Republicans are sometimes wrong. Usually the truth lies in the middle of the two. And if you can come to the table and actually talk to people as human beings and not a D or an R, I, and again, setting labels aside, we have this problem even internally within the LGBT community.
Oh, yeah.
That we need to set labels aside and see people for who they really are. Politics is no different. And so I think that is what translated very well when I was talking to folks back home in my district of why I wanted to be reelected, why I wanted to serve them again. I wanted to go back and fight for their interests regardless of what party they represented. We may ultimately disagree on a few issues, and that's okay, but you're going to always know where I stand, and you're going to always be able to contact me. I mean, I give out my phone number, you know, you can call me directly, you know, which is unlike a lot of situations today where it's actually really hard to, you know, contact your officials, but I'm pretty accessible. You can tweet me an issue, and it's those things that I think go a long way into building a strong relationship with the people that put you in this position.
Well, let's finish out talking about LGBT life there in the state of Maine. What work is there left to do for your LGBT brothers and sisters? sisters in the state of Maine, and what can you do to advance that?
Well, I think number one is stopping bad legislation. There's going to be very limited things we're going to be able to do this session regarding transgender rights. That's going to be a big issue that we're going to have to tackle, but we're not going to be able to tackle it this session. Banning conversion therapy in our state needs to be done. Not going to happen this session. So stopping bad legislation would look like the Religious Freedom Bill, the ability to basically roll back the clock on equal rights for everybody, basically, and say, you know, as a business, you should be able to deny anybody service. You know, if I walk into Dunkin' Donuts, which, by the way, I should own stock in Dunkin' Donuts. I go there so much. You know, they could put up a sign this policy went through and say, you know what? No gays allowed.
Yeah.
No women allowed. And that's totally acceptable under this policy. And so this is going to be coming up. A bill has been submitted. It's going to pass the Senate. We have to stop it in the House. And so this is a situation where would I like to tell you we can tackle some of these other issues, like LGBT issues regarding the elderly community.
Yeah.
That's huge that we have to tackle, because we have to be more concerned with stopping these bad pieces of legislation that rolls back the clock. And so I'd like to be able to tackle more issues, but until we get the state Senate back, until we get the Blaine House back, it's going to be very difficult for us to be ushering through, kind of moving the ball forward on LGBT rights when, you know, the marriage issue was tough enough. You know, so we're laying the foundation slowly but surely. But if we get this bad policy in place, it's going to mean I'm not going to be able to go to certain places. It's going to mean that my rights are going to be diminished and I'm going to be a second-class citizen.
How do you not stand up in the middle of a session? I mean, obviously, the rules of order, that's a big reason. But how are you not sitting there and thinking, we don't have time for this, you know, with the economy, with all the other issues out there, to be taking the time to, as you say, roll back rights, to be taking the time to codify legislation that would actively take away rights? I don't understand how we can justify spending the time on that.
It's anti-business, it's anti-economy when you're putting in legislation that, number one, costs hundreds of dollars to put in a bill. So to go through the entire process, it costs hundreds of dollars just for one bill. And so when you put in a piece of legislation that's just so bad, that it's not based in any semblance of reality, it's actually costing taxpayers money. So to me, and I'm going to put on my partisan hat here for a second,
Go for it.
A party that's so focused on calling their campaign centers freedom centers, they're sure as heck focusing a lot on taking away my personal freedoms. And so I do say this, you know, when we do talk about these issues on the House floor, people like myself and others within our caucus and others stand up and say, you know what, this is not acceptable. The people sent us here to tackle things like the economy, growing our economy, making sure that young people can afford to go to college. Those are the things that they might be the similar issues that always pop up in election cycles, but they're things that we have to tackle. And when we're so focused on things like rolling back the clock on child labor laws, for instance, or LGBT rights, or women's reproductive health choices, you know, to me, that's taking away things that we could be really focusing on and coming together. These are wedge issues. I mean, I want to work with the people on the other side of the aisle. I talk about it. I'm like, I want to work with you. Let's get things done. And I do it in the youth caucus. But when issues like this come up and they say, you know what, Justin, you're less than. You know, you're a second-class citizen. You're not good enough to have the same rights that I do. How do I not take personal offense to that?
Right.
How do I not get up and say, enough is enough? This is not acceptable. What year are we in? Oh, that's right, 2015.
Right.
It is time to wake up and smell the coffee. Let's focus on something that's urgent and important.
It's one of those things that I'm not sure everybody totally understands about public office, you know, even from my 3 years serving in Vermont. It actually is mutually exclusive sometimes when you have legislation out there because, as you've said, there's a finite amount of time that you have to be in session. So when you spend this absurd amount of time on an absurd piece of legislation, it actually does knock out other things that you could be doing.
Yeah, we have 1,700 bills we're tackling between now and June. That is a short window and a lot of bills,
yeah.
And each bill has to go through the process of going to the committee of jurisdiction over a certain subject matter, has to go through a public hearing and a work session, and then after that, if it's passed, you know, if there's not one, you know, just one person has to vote for it on the committee in order for it to go to the House floor and the Senate floor for a vote, and then it has to be debated, and then it comes back between the bodies, And then we actually pass something that goes to the governor, which he is not afraid to use his veto pen, as evident with the record number of vetoes last legislative session. So you're right. It's just, it takes up a lot of time that we could be focusing on really good pieces of legislation that are bipartisan, that bring us together, that are universally acclaimed and recognized. So I just hope we can get back to that and stop dividing us and actually focusing on things that bring us closer together.
Well, let me give you the last word. What words of wisdom do you have for everybody listening in how they can get involved, how they can support all the change that you're trying to create, how they can be a voice in their own community?
Well, I think it's a little bit of self-reflection. It's about recognizing your own creative spark that's within you. And I know I'm pulling a little bit of an Oprah/Dr. Phil moment.
Do it.
I think it's really important that people recognize what they are meant to do on this earth. And it sounds really spiritual, but at the end of the day, you have to do what makes you most happy, what really resonates with you. And you'll know it. When you find that one thing that you're very passionate about, it doesn't have to be running for office. A title doesn't make the person. It's what you do. You know, you don't have to be a state rep to make a difference or the president. What you can do is make a difference in your own community. It's like the simple things really matter. Holding the door for somebody at the post office
right. Goes
a long way, those random acts of kindness. But if you can find that one thing and latch yourself onto it that you're really passionate about, it sounds corny, but you really won't work a day in your life. It'll be a lot of work, but it will be things that you can go to bed knowing that you did all you could do to make a difference in this world, to leave our world in a better place than we actually have it. And I just think that each and every one of us has that within ourselves. It's this inner strength that sometimes we neglect and sometimes are told either by this inner voice inside our head or these external sources in our community, oh, you're not good enough, you can't make it. But if there's some one thing that I really learned over the years is channeling that negativity into something productive and positive, channeling your own inner energy to chart your own course. And sometimes that means going against the grain. Sometimes that means, like for me, challenging my own party sometimes when I believe something is right. You have to stand up for yourself because no one's going to do it for you. It's a dog-eat-dog world, and that reality needs to be awaken for a younger generation that we can do it. We can have a seat at the table. You can make a difference. Even just one person and one act really can go far in this world. And it's about finding your inner voice, your inner strength, and just running with it.
Man, I am telling you, you are such a freaking inspiration. It's such an amazing treat to have you on the show. The work that you're doing there in the state of Maine is, look, I've been following you for quite a few years, and to see a youth voice represented, you are a walking monument to, look, you have a voice, you can use your voice, you can make change, and you got to stand in the face of folks telling you that you might not be able to do that and know that you have something to say and you have change that you want to create. And I know that you downplay the LGBT part, and that's just a part of your identity, but I guarantee you, sir, that there is some gay youth in the state of Maine who did not see public office as a possibility for them, and then they saw you and now know that that is a way that they can use their voice. You really are an inspiration, my friend.
Well, thank you so much, Ken. And again, I'm so happy to be on the show and talking to, you know, these very important issues. I mean, it's so important, again, that people get involved. And if that one person does want to get more involved, then I've done my job, because it's all about the next generation. Everything that we do today has a direct impact on future generations. And so the more you get involved, whether you're, you know, 5 or 50, it's really important to start now. So thank
Perfect.
You again, Ken. I really appreciate it.
Everybody can stroll on over to justinchinette.com. We will link to it. He's on the Facebook. He's on the Twitter. Hey, Justin, will you do the tagline with me? The only two words you need to know, and you'll know when to say them, are so gay. I'll tell you
sure.
when. Okay. You guys, you should be inspired. Get out there. Go use your voice the way you know how to use it to make a difference for your LGBT and ally brothers and sisters. And while you are out there using your voice, please remember, why be gay when you can be
so gay?